Welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, and on today's episode, we have a fabulous guest, Harris O'Malley, otherwise known as Dr. Nerdlove. You can submit a question to be answered on future episodes by heading over to PleasureMechanics.com, where you will also find our complete podcast archive. When you are ready to level up your sex life, get started for free with our Erotic Essentials mini course. Sign up at pleasuremechanics.com/free. So let's dive into today's conversation. Harris O'Malley is a blogger and dating coach who provides geek dating advice at pagingdrnerdlove.com. While he's not a real doctor, Harris is tremendously successful at performing surgery on out-of-date myths that hold us all back, resuscitating much-needed wisdom, and healing the hearts of nerds worldwide. His latest book is called It's Dangerous to Go Alone, a Relationship Survival Handbook. Harris, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We are so excited. I've been reading your stuff for a long time and always admire your approach and your heartfulness. And really, it's like an injection of confidence for anyone who reads your words. Can you get us started by sharing how you became Dr. Nerdlove?
It's a bit of an involved story, but yeah. When I was first starting to seriously date, I was god awful at it. I had no idea what I was doing. Most of my ideas of what, like, you know, courtship and dating and relationships look like came from watching all the wrong romantic comedies. So I grew up basically identifying way too much with Ducky from Pretty in Pink. And that really just informed pretty much everything I did well through college. And the only serious relationship I had was, to put it mildly, toxic. And when I finally ended that one 4 years too late, I had no idea what I was doing. And it all really kind of came to a head at a wedding that I went to, where one of my best friends and I call him Miles on the site, and he attracts women the way that cheese attracts mice. And he and I went head to head over the same woman who was at the party, and he won. And to add insult to injury, he had the room that was right next to mine at the hotel.
No.
So that was not the most pleasant of nights for me. And I had what I refer to as my Batman moment, where, you know, in the Batman mythos, you know, Bruce is sitting in his living room and a bat comes crashing through the window and he says, "Yes, father, it's a sign, I shall become a bat." Whereas for me, it was, you know, Google results coming crashing through the search engine when I typed in how to get better at girls. And I found a listing for Neil Strauss's The Game. And I bought a copy and just dove headfirst into that and just got deep into the pickup artist scene. I mean, I took boot camps, I joined the local lair, I just took to that with the passion of the newly converted. And it was during all of this that, towards the end, I realized, I don't like who I'm turning into. Like, I realized at one point I had not talked to any of my non, you know, pickup friends about anything but pickup. Most of what I was doing was just going out and trying to get laid and really being, for lack of no better term than exploiting people, really being kind of pushy, being very manipulative. And just this one night, I was at a club and about to go home with someone when I realized I don't know her, I don't like her, I'm already planning on how I'm going to get out without ever talking to her again. And it just kind of came to a point of, like, I don't like any of this. Well, I take that back. I liked the sex. I liked the results I was having. But I didn't like what I was doing to get there. And so I kind of had to dial everything back and just start really figuring out what actually worked, what didn't work, how much of it required that I go out to overpriced clubs where it was too loud and I was dealing with people I didn't like. And I really just wanted to backwards engineer a lot of the stuff so I could still have the success without necessarily becoming this asshole in the process. And during all of this, I was on a podcast called The League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen, and we did an episode about Scott Pilgrim versus the World when the movie came out. And we were talking about, we called it the league versus our evil exes. And we fielded a lot of dating questions from our listeners. And because I was kind of the resident man about town at the time, I was taking lead on a lot of the questions. And Martin, one of the guys hosting the podcast, referred to me as Dr. Nerdlove. And I kind of sat there and thought, you know, that's actually a really good name. And we did another episode for Valentine's Day where I did even more questions, and I realized, hey, I didn't get to everybody's questions. I feel bad about this. I did a quick video that we put up, and it really just kind of spiraled from there, and I realized I had to do something with this, and I started the blog.
Beautiful. So I want to dive in later to the difference between what you teach and pickup artistry, and let's spiral back to that. But let's start with, when you talk about nerds, you kind of talk about people who are socially awkward in relationships, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, that's kind of most of us, I think. But specifically looking at men, what are some of the things you think boys and young men are taught about relationships that leads to so many people feeling awkward and uncomfortable and really illiterate when it comes to dating and relationships?
Well, I think part of the problem is we're not taught anything. We're kind of tossed out there with the idea that it's sink or swim. It's a binary. You're either good with girls or you're not. And we really kind of still have that feeling of, if you admit that you're not good at dating or social skills and you try to improve, there's something shameful about that. And that's part of the reason why there's such an empty market for guys who want to improve their social skills. Whereas with women, women are taught to be social. They are taught to be more open, to be more empathetic, to actually admit weakness. And there are a lot of resources out there for improving one's appearance, for one's social skills, how to be flirty, how to be attractive. You can argue rather well that some of them are worse than useless. I'm looking at, Cosmo back in the day. It's shockingly improved now. Mm. But they are out there, and it's more okay for women to admit this sort of like lack in their lives. Whereas for guys, to admit that there's something wrong is to admit weakness, and we are socialized never to do that. So there's a whole lot of just negative ideas about what it means to be a man, what it means to be sexual, how men and women are supposed to relate. I mean, guys are taught, everybody is taught that, men want sex and women don't want sex. And so women are the gatekeepers. And so we have heterosexual relationships, obviously. Homosexual relationships have a different mechanic entirely. Mechanic's not the right word.
It works on this podcast.
Yeah. It's different social standards, different social expectations. But with like heterosexual relationships, guys are taught we have to be the aggressors and we have to realize that women don't want sex. And so we have to get sex from them, but we have to get it for as cheap as possible because women have to get it for as expensive as possible. They're holding out for the diamond and we're holding out for nothing. And there can be no meeting of the minds. And it sets up this really combative and antagonistic mechanic of relating to one another that's really counterproductive at almost every level and ignores pretty much everything about human sexuality. Like women want sex as much as men do. It's society tells them they're not allowed to be sexual. They're allowed to be sexy, but not sexual, desirable, but not attainable. And, their guys are as valued as the sex they do have, and women are as valued as the sex they don't have. And all that happens is it puts us on opposite ends of things and makes everybody miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you begin to unpack this? Like, what is your vision for healthy masculinity?
Healthy masculinity for me involves men learning to become much more comfortable with their emotions, being able to connect with people, not just women, because that's another problem that guys have. We're not supposed to connect emotionally with guys. There's still a lot of internalized homophobia of like straight guys don't do this thing. We can't tell our guy friends, hey man, I love you, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. At least not without doing the ritual three pound back hug.
Yeah.
Being able to, embrace pretty much all spectrums of sexual expression, whether they are, as horny as a satyr or they are asexual, and realize that both are okay. Learning how to establish boundaries and how to respect other people's boundaries. a lot of it is respect for both themselves and for the people around them, and not treating everything as a status contest.
Yeah, your book, I love your book. I love it. Thank you. I feel like it could easily be called How to Be an Awesome Person. You go through best practices when it comes to dating and relationships, but also these things of communicating and fighting and boundary setting. And it's super comprehensive. And I feel like it's so needed, not only for young men, but for kind of all people. How did you go about crafting this book and coming up with your universal relationship truths and your conversations you must have? Like, where did you draw from to craft this fabulous book?
A lot of bitter personal experience. All of my failed relationships, my successful relationships, my current marriage, my friends' marriages, talking with them, seeing who had, you know, which problems when. Really, just a lot of talking to people, a lot of examining, and a fair amount of study too. I mean, I'm like you said, I am not a doctor. I've had no medical psychological training whatsoever. But I do a lot of reading and a lot of study, and just all over the place. And that's really been really helpful for all of this.
I love it. So let's circle back to pickup artistry. Mm-hmm. Can you briefly describe kind of what that is for people who aren't familiar with it and how you do things differently?
Well, it gets interesting because there's a lot of overlap between what I do and what pickup artists do, but it's kind of the difference between holding a hammer and threatening someone with it and holding a hammer and building a house. It's the same tool, but you can use it for different things. Mm. And pickup artistry, really, it started in the, as we currently know it at least, the organized idea. It kind of started in the late 90s online, as it tends to, with like websites like alt.seduction, and was people getting together trying to share tips on how to pick up women. And the first big name in pickup was Ross Jeffries with his speed seduction course, which was, you know, here's how to hypnotize women into wanting to have sex with you. And it required these weird, like, conversational things that made you sound like you're talking like some sort of odd combination of robot and the innuendo guy from Saturday Night Live. And saying things that are supposed to, like, it was using a lot of what's called neuro-linguistic programming, where you're supposed to be dropping embedded commands and saying crazy things like, you know, you think these thoughts come from above you, but really they come from below me. Because subtle. And, you know, with Mystery and Neil Strauss as Style, whatnot, they really popularized it with the publication of The Game. And a lot of organized pickup was based out of all these things that they thought about male and female sexuality, like, you know, women only want men of a certain status, and they will do what's called shit testing you to find out if you're actually that status or not. So you have to respond this way, or you have to say this thing, or you have to exhibit these very specific behaviors or personality types so that women will find you attractive. And a lot of it is actually built out of things like high-pressure car sales. So there's a lot of doing things like using what's called the compliance ladder, where the more you say yes to something, the more likely you are to continue saying yes to something. Or doing qualification tests or compliance hoops, where you try to get somebody to do increasingly involved things for you. It's like, hey, could you hold this for me for a second? I need to tie my shoe, leading up to, hey, I'm going over here, come with me, to, hey, why don't you grab us another drink, to, hey, why don't you come back with me and leave your friends over there? And a lot of it became very much about manipulating women into having sex. Not necessarily against their will, because it makes it sound like it's hypnotism and that you're Svengali, but more social pressure, mm-hmm. and pressuring someone into doing something that they might not otherwise want to do. And a lot of the techniques were aimed towards that. I learned a lot of that stuff. And, you know, to my chagrin, I used a lot of it. And then later I was just like, okay, how much of this is actually necessary? How much of this is real? A lot of what I do is I try to teach people to be more attractive. I try to teach how to flirt. But I also teach, you know, you don't manipulate someone into getting into bed with you. You like excite them. You're not trying to pressure them into it. You want to get a, a phrase that I borrowed from another ex pickup artist, Mark Manson. You want to get a fuck yes, not a fuck no. So fuck yes or fuck no. Fuck no, I don't want to do it. Fuck yes, I want to do it. You want to, you know, encourage someone to say fuck yes. And, you know, the idea of enthusiastic consent, somebody who is eager and excited to be doing whatever, whether it's making out, having sex, going on a date, whatever. And these are the techniques to make yourself more appealing, to help turn someone on, to help understand why people get turned on, and here's how to do it, and here's how to encourage it. So it's not manipulating, it's not mind control, it's just here's how to be more appealing, here's how to be sexier.
And how much of this is just about confidence, about taking men from a place of feeling insecure and unsure about themselves to feeling like they're a good guy with something to offer?
That is so much of it. And that's part of what worked for pickup and for a lot of guys. It's because it gave them this flowchart, I guess, that would let them feel like, oh, hey, I know what I'm doing. Or it gave them this artificial personality to put on that made them feel like, oh, I can do this. Where I'm trying to teach genuine confidence of, yeah, you don't have to be this one way. You just want to be this, you want to focus on this side of yourself. And being more confident doesn't mean that you don't have doubts. It doesn't mean that you're smooth. It doesn't mean that you don't worry about things. It just means that you know that you can do something, and you know that if you mess up, it's not going to destroy you. And so you're empowered to take risks and to take chances. And when an opportunity arises, feeling confident means you have this chance to do it, and you're going to maximize your opportunity, as opposed to somebody who's sitting there going, I can't do this right now. No, there's no way this would happen. If I go up and talk to this person, I'm going to creep them out, and then they're going to be really annoyed and tell all their friends, and then everybody's going to know, and then I'm going to get arrested and thrown in jail and maced, and then I'm going to have to leave town, and everybody's going to find out in the new town that I was this creep in this old town. And honestly, nerds have the worst superpower. We can come up with the most elaborate and seemingly realistic worst-case scenarios ever.
And what can women do to make it safer for men to express their desire and to approach women? I feel like often men's desire is even criminalized and looked at as unsafe, and yet so many women put so much effort into being desirable. Like, how can we balance this out and make it easier for men to feel ready to approach?
Well, I honestly don't think it's women's job to make it easier for guys. Women already do a lot of work. And the problem is a lot of guys don't recognize or respect the work that goes into that women put into being more attractive and more appealing. So I think it's more on guys to make it easier on other guys. I mean, there is a tendency, at least in, you know, feminist circles, to talk a lot about the problematic aspects of male desire. And for a lot of guys, it can be intimidating. I hear from a lot of people who worry because they've read a lot of the feminist literature, and more often than not, it's because they read Andrea Dworkin as opposed to, like, bell hooks. But they worry that they are, you know, going to be seen as predatory or criminal or whatnot. And it's an understandable fear, but it's one that's kind of self-inflicted, and guys have to sort of learn that they're allowed to make mistakes as long as they admit their mistakes, try to make amends for when they do mess up, to legitimately apologize, to say, I'm sorry that I did this, not I'm sorry that you were, you know, not use any weasel words or passive language, and to not fuck up again the second time. So the only thing that I would say that women could do that would make things easier is to be glaringly obvious in approach when they're interested in someone approaching, just because a lot of guys don't necessarily recognize some of the signals that women use to signal that they're interested in someone talking to them. But that being said, that's also something that guys need to learn to look for. So that's one of the things I teach. I teach a lot of body language and a lot of cues of, like, here's someone who's saying, yes, please come talk to me. And here's someone who's saying, please don't come talk to me. And, you know, I think mostly it's guys who need to learn a lot of things, like, you know, hey, someone with headphones on is saying, do not talk.
It's going to become harder with wireless headphones.
Yeah, but honestly, it's the way that I put it is it's kind of like, imagine you're, you know, going through your day and you see a guy with a clipboard coming up to you and you're trying to keep your eyes straight forward. You're not making eye contact. You're walking like you're looking for the Holy Grail, and they just plant themselves right in front of you and they want to talk about, you know, would you sign this petition? Would you sign this thing? Would you donate money to save the children or whatnot? And they're ignoring all of your please don't talk to me signs. How willing are you to give them some of your time? Not very willing. Well, that's what it's like for women on the bus who just want to get through their commute. And you're sitting there going like, so, hey, what's your name? Hey, can I get your number? It's like, no, don't do that. Wait. There are other places where you can meet women. The bus is one where if they want to talk to you, they'll let you know.
Hmm. So let's jump from dating to marriage. What have you learned and kind of furthered your philosophy since being married and being in a long-term committed relationship?
Communicate, 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 and also communicate. Marriage is a conversation that never really ends. And that's really important because it's very easy to get into ruts where you assume things either that happened early in the relationship or that never got brought up at all and could be very, very, you know, incorrect or could change over time. I mean, the marriage that you have when you first start is not the marriage you're going to have 1 year down the line, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, because we all grow and we all change. And that really keeping track of how we're changing it and adapting to it is really important.
And what are some of your thoughts around keeping sexuality alive and keeping desire alive when you're with the same person?
That is really a tricky thing to do, not because of any like male or female sexuality, but just because we are mammals and we get what's known as the I'm blanking on the name of it now. It's either the Coolidge. I think it's the Coolidge effect.
Yeah.
Where basically we get less of a dopamine charge from sex with the same person over and over again. And so over time, in any committed relationship, doesn't matter how much you love someone, you can love them to pieces, the passion tends to ebb out for a while. That happens to everybody, and it's tricky because we tend to associate that passion with our, you know, with the strength of our relationship. And we assume that when the passion starts to fade, then there's something wrong. But passion, like anything else, it is something that can be brought back. It can be, you know, it can be re-engaged. It takes a lot of work. And sometimes it's a matter of doing things differently. Like couples get into ruts of, you know, only having sex at night in the bedroom with the lights off, and changing that up can add much needed novelty. Or exploring different, you know, different sides of your sexuality. Maybe introducing kink into your relationship. For some people, definitely not for everybody, ethical non-monogamy may be an answer, especially because amongst many people who have some form of, you know, openness, whether it's limited or very full, they find that coming back to their partner after being with someone else seriously charges their relationship back up. And it's something that every couple is going to go through, and every couple kind of has to find what works best for them. And it's hard to make a one-size-fits-all proclamation for it. For some people, you know, ethical non-monogamy would do it. For a non-ethical, I mean, for other people, that is going to be a line that nobody can cross, and, you know, more power to them.
I love in your book, you do encourage, though, even if you're not going the non-monogamous route, to remember that desire for other people is very normal and natural. I love the quote you say, just remember, attraction isn't an obligation, nor is arousal a compulsion.
Yeah, that's the other thing that comes up a lot in letters I get from people in relationships who suddenly realize they've got a crush on Carl from accounting or Donna from the next office over, and they want to know what's wrong with them. Why don't they love their spouse anymore? And all I have to remind them is, you know, monogamy, you know, is neither good nor bad, but it is not our default state. We are literally not built for it. So monogamy is a conscious choice. And the fact that you have chosen to make a monogamous commitment with someone doesn't mean you're not going to want to have sex with someone else. It just means you're choosing not to. So you're going to get crushes. You're going to be attracted to people. Sometimes it's going to hit you like just a Mack truck out of nowhere. And that's really all it is. It's just a crush. It's pleasurable. It's fun. It's fun to have a crush, but it's not an obligation. It doesn't mean that now that you're attracted to this person, you need to try to sleep with them. It just means that you're feeling this way. And honestly, most of the time, if you just let it be, it'll go away on its own. I mean, think of the crushes anybody had in grade school or high school. They go away.
Or they just become fantasy fodder.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the other thing. What goes on between your ears is your business and your business alone.
Mm. And what do you say to guys who are intimidated by learning new sexual skills? Like, one of the things we offer at Pleasure Mechanics is online courses to learn new skills, from couples massage to kink and everything in between. And we get a lot of letters from guys who are like, I don't want to be bad at something, so I'm not going to start something new. What would you say to them?
I would say that everybody starts off unskilled. There's four stages to developing any skill. There's unconscious incompetence, where you don't know what you don't know. Conscious incompetence, where you understand that there are things that you don't know. Conscious competence, where you're starting to learn, where you're starting to get practice at it. And then unconscious competence, where it becomes natural to you. Mm-hmm. And we all start bad at stuff. I mean, while yes, there are people who have a natural talent for one thing or another, none of us are born with an instruction manual, or we don't have the matrix jacked into our heads, so we don't automatically learn like, well, here's, you know, the best style of couples massage, or here's the best way to use a sex toy. We have to learn, and that takes practice. And like any other skill, you know, you're going to be a little awkward and rusty at first, and then you will get better at it. Nobody's going to be perfect at it the first time. And when you're with a partner, part of the fun is the learning process.
Yeah, what qualities make it fun and exciting versus scary and tedious? Like, what do you bring to it?
I think you have to bring an attitude of yes, can do, we'll try this, and a willingness to listen. And because you have to be willing to hear, hey, you know, maybe do this differently, or maybe try this, or, you know, this isn't comfortable for me, and not take it personally. Uh-huh. So if you can listen and take instruction and take guidance from your partner, then you're going to improve a lot quicker. And there's nothing more tedious for anyone, male or female, gay or straight, than a partner who's doing something and you're saying, yes, more of that, keep doing that, and they immediately switch to something else.
Perfect. And it's so much like a video game and these other nerdy things that we love to do. We start as novices and level up slowly and then master our domain.
Exactly. And there's always going to be a learning curve. And the more comfortable you get with that and the more willing you are to practice and to experiment, the quicker you'll master it.
What other nerdy skills can we bring into the bedroom?
The best thing I think you can bring into it is teamwork. Anyone who's done a lot of MMOs and does what the end game stuff, the raiding or whatnot, knows that communication and teamwork is important, where everybody has a role and has to execute it correctly. Bringing that sort of attitude towards it of, I'm responsible for this thing, you're responsible for this thing, here's how we make these happen together to make it work for all of us, I think is really valuable. Especially when you're in relationships in general, and especially in the bedroom.
I love it. And in your book, you encourage people to, quote, expect more and be more. What do you mean by this?
I mean, we tend to settle. I mean, in every relationship, there is a certain amount of settling down. And it's understandable. We're not going out trying to impress people. So we let ourselves go, both, you know, physically and psychologically. We don't take as good care of ourselves necessarily, but we also get used to things from our partner. So all the little things we used to do, like bringing flowers or little gifts just because we know they like them, or doing something nice for them just because, we do that a lot in the early days. We do that less so the longer it goes on. And that's part of how we end up feeling taken for granted and how our partners start feeling taken for granted. And by continuing to put in effort to treat our relationships almost like we're on the first date, it makes our partners feel noticed and appreciated, and that really strengthens the core of our relationships. So you know, when you go out for date night and doing things, instead of like, let's go for a pleasant meal and then go for a movie. It's like, no, we're going to go get dressed to the nines and go dancing. Or we're going to go out and we're going to go do something we would have done on a first date back in the early days. Then it recaptures a lot of that early excitement and makes you remember that why the two of you fell for each other in the first place.
Hmm. Your book is so full of amazing advice on how to bring our A game to relationships, to sex, to dating. Thank you so much for putting it together for us. Where can people find you online and get your amazing book?
Well, my main website is drnerdlove.com, spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, nerdlove, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at drnerdlove and on Facebook, facebook.com/drnerdlove. And my books are currently Amazon exclusive. They're at, if you look up Harris O'Malley on Amazon, you can find it, or the books are New Game plus symbol. It's Dangerous to Go Alone, Simplified Dating, and When It Clicks.
Beautiful. And we will link that all up on the show notes page over at pleasuremechanics.com. Last question. What are you most excited about in the realm of relationships and sexuality right now?
Right now, I'm really interested in seeing how things like VR are going to shape out for relationships, especially long-distance relationships.
Virtual reality.
Yeah. I mean, now that Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive and other forms of VR are coming out, people are mostly talking about things like video games or VR entertainment, like VR porn and whatnot, which is all very cool. But one of the things that's hard in long-distance relationships is that lack of a connection, or that not feeling in the presence of your partner. And I think that something like VR could really be an interesting way of bridging the metaphorical and very literal gap so that you can kind of have dates with someone and have their presence there, even if, you know, you can't necessarily touch. And I think that could be really interesting in seeing how people who are separated by distance make their relationships work.
And maybe virtual touch is the next horizon.
Oh, I think so. I know a lot of people are working at it, and that can get really interesting.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. We really appreciate all you do.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Beautiful. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com on the show notes page, and you will find all things Dr. Nerdlove, and you can go learn more.